Today is a special day for me. Every day is a special day by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Every day we engage in chanting the holy names of Krishna, engaging in the service of Krishna, in service of the acharyas, in the parampara, studying Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So every day is special. That's described in Srimad Bhagavatam, that the spiritual world is a Nitya Mahotsav, daily festival. So it may seem that this is a special day. Yes, it's a special day. Every day. Every day is a special day in Krishna's service. I suppose this is a special day for me because everyone's looking at me. You're all looking at me. Or I can say, look at Prabhupada. If you're looking at me, then I can just look here. That I'm taking your attention means I should direct that to where you will get actual benefit. And Srila Prabhupada directs us toward Krishna. Krishna is the center. I am not the center. Krishna is the center of everything. Everything revolves around Krishna. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arshabhritta Jara Joiche Nachai Tare Toiche Kare Nritta. There is one supreme controller who is Krishna. And all others are his servants. All others, they dance according to the way he makes them dance. So materialistic people, they like to direct the attention toward themselves. But in Krishna consciousness, that may be there also. But that is, as Srila Prabhupada sometimes gave the example of a tax collector. He collects tribute, or collects that which is due from various persons, brings it all together and deposits it with the proper authority in Vedic culture, gives it to the king. So, in the same way, the guru accepts tribute from others and offers all of that to Krishna through the parampara system. So this function might seem that it's centered on me, but everything should be centered on Krishna, and in ISKCON specifically on Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. So if you can all understand that and not just look at me, then I'll do my job properly. And if you're only looking at me and you're not thinking of Krishna, then I failed. And then you shouldn't be looking at me. The only purpose is to direct others toward Krishna. That's the only purpose. Of course, naturally, there's an exchange of affection. It's not just like someone outside some restaurants, they employ people to... I haven't seen it in India, maybe in the West sometimes, they employ people to hold up a sign and point as people come past. Point and try, in this way, try to get people to go into the restaurant. So most people ignore that. They walk past, and even if they do walk into the restaurant, it's not that they feel any great sense of gratefulness or affection to, even if they think the restaurant's a very good restaurant, they won't think that the person who's standing outside the door on the lowest possible wage, directing them into the restaurant is anyone to have any kind of relationship with whatsoever. And in modern schools and educational institutions also, the teachers and the professors, it's a job. They do the job. The students come in. They don't have any particular feeling for the teacher. The teacher has no particular feeling for them. The students have no particular feeling for the subject. The teachers also may not be very interested in it. For them, it's just a job. So, when the students have finished their term of study, they go their ways, and they never see the teachers again or think about them. Since I left school, I never saw any of my teachers again. And I only saw a couple of my friends from school when I was on Harinam Sankirtan in London on different occasions, and they happened to see me. So that is a relationship of convenience that the student learns from the teacher, but there's no affection involved. But this relationship of guru and disciple is centered on Krishna. And Krishna, he is eternal. The jivas are eternal. The relationship is eternal. And it's not a relationship of convenience. Because Krishna has nothing to gain from anyone. He is Atmaram, he's fully sufficient in himself. And Aptakama, he's completely capable of fulfilling all his desires by himself. Everything is fulfilled by his various energies. And the jivas also who approach him in bhakti, bhakti means to have no personal desire. So they have nothing to... The jivas who approach Krishna in devotional service, it's not that they're doing so to get something for their own personal gain from Krishna. So there's no question of it being a relationship of mutual convenience. Rather, the very basis is a relationship of mutual affection. Of course, in the beginning stages, in the material world, people take to Krishna consciousness for various reasons. Chatur vidha bhajante manjana sukritin arjuna arto jignyasur artharti jnani cha bharatarshava. Four kinds of pious people approach Krishna. The distressed, the desirous of wealth, the curious, and the knowledgeable. But even in that, there is some exchange of affection. There must be, because Krishna himself is so much affectionate that anyone who approaches him, even with material motives, he personally reciprocates with them. So, you have all come here very kindly to assist me to remember my position as a servant of Srila Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas and Krishna, to offer respect to Srila Prabhupada and through him to all the acharyas. And as long as I remember that just as I'm directing, I must be directing you towards Srila Prabhupada, and I must do myself also. For a Vaishnava, or one aspiring to be a Vaishnava, it's a very unusual position to be sitting above others and instructing, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction or his direction Trinada Pisa Nichena Tarori Vasayishna Amani Namana Dena Kirtani Sada Harihi. One should always chant the holy names of the Lord, Krishna, in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself to be lower than a straw in the street, and one should be more tolerant than a tree. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, taking the role of the ideal Vaishnava, instructed us in this way. He gave us this instruction. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were instructed to be humble, he gave an instruction. So he may think, if you're humble, how can you give an instruction? But we can, even to ask others to humbly serve Krishna, that might appear to contradict the principle of humility. But unless Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs that, then how will anyone get the idea? Because in this material world, no one is trying to be more humble than a blade of grass. Everyone is trying to be more arrogant than Ravana and Hiranyakashipu combined. That's the tendency in the material world. So unless Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs, then how will anyone even get an idea that we're supposed to be more humble than a blade of grass, to think of ourselves as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described himself, Gopi Bhartur, Father Kamalaya, Dasu Dasa Mugasa. By saying that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that he considers himself the servant of the servant of the servant of the maintainer of the husband of the gopis, the lotus feet of the servant, of the lotus feet of the husband of the gopis, namely Krishna. By saying Das and Das, it's understood that that can be extended. Das and Das and Das and Das. Like this. One should think oneself. One should consider oneself in a very, to be very insignificant. So, all these things we've heard before. We've all heard before. We're supposed to be the servant of the servant of the servant. There's no harm to repeat it. In fact, it's necessary to repeat it. It's not redundant to repeat. Even though we've all heard before that we should be cultivating the mentality of being a servant of the servant of the servant of the Vaishnavas. Not only is there no harm in saying it, but it is essential to keep on repeating this, knowing that considering ourselves in this way is the only path of our real good fortune. In the material consciousness, if one is a servant, that's not considered very good. And to be the servant of a servant, that sounds like a very degraded position. The Vaishnava is not interested in being the servant of the servant of anyone, but he's interested in being the servant of the servant of Krishna. He's not interested in being even the direct servant of a great king. There are so many examples of Vaishnavas. Vedanta Deshika, Jayadeva Goswami, Gorki Shodas Babaji Maharaj, who are asked by rich and influential kings and landlords to come to their court or to their home, but they wouldn't go. They would prefer to live in poverty, material poverty, apparently incognito, and have no material position. If they went to the court of the king, they would be lauded by others as great scholars, great devotees, a great scholar in the case of Vedanta Deshika, a great poet also. And Jayadev, great poet, but they didn't want to go. They were not interested in being the servant even of the best person in the material world, but they were, because they were wholly interested to be the servant of the servant of the servant of he who makes even the biggest person in the material world seem insignificant, which they actually are. But the Vaishnava is very intelligent because he knows how to serve. As Srila Prabhupada always pointed out, we are by constitution servants. We cannot but be servants. We are all serving others. So we should know who to serve. By serving whom, we shall be actually satisfied. Prashant and Vishisha, and all the time to learn. How we will be by serving which person, we will be fully satisfied. By serving whom, the mind will become fully peaceful and satisfied. In this material world, the servant is always looking for the opportunity to become the master. He has no intrinsic sense of service to the master. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of one very rich man in Calcutta who was honored by all the aristocratic society. He used to hold big social gatherings and spend lots of money. This increases one's prestige to do so. Rich people, if they show their wealth, then their prestige as a wealthy person becomes broadcast. So by doing this, this man eventually became poor, because even though he was very wealthy, naturally his funds were limited, so he didn't manage his funds well. He was just spending, so that he had no money left at one point in time. At one point in time, and then everyone forgot. No one was interested in him. As long as his wealth lasted, he was considered prestigious. When the money finished, no one was interested in him. And one of his old cohorts of members of the aristocratic society saw him walking in the street at night in Calcutta in the rain, because he couldn't afford to go by rickshaw or carriage or whatever. So out of some sense of respect for what the man used to be, this aristocratic person arranged a rickshaw to take this person to wherever he was going. So in this material world, the master-servant relationship is based on envy. The master wants to exploit the servant, and the servant is envious of the master. And within civilized society, that envy may be mitigated to some extent. In Vedic society, followers of Dharma, they're supposed to, or not only in Vedic society, in any civilized or semi-civilized society, the master is supposed to maintain the servant, see that their needs are taken care of. So some affection may be there. There's a Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks of the Kshatriya. One of his qualities, it's mentioned as a good quality, Ishvara Bhava. He has the abhiman, he has the sense of self-identity, that he is controlling, he's looking after, he has to have the feeling that all these citizens are just like my children. I have to look after them. So that may be there to some extent. But it depends on circumstances. The leader of today may not be tomorrow. But Krishna is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the jiva is always his servant. And therefore, and Krishna is fully competent to maintain and satisfy the servant in all respects. And the servant can find full satisfaction and protection in the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So, Guru, his duty is to direct others toward that place, that shelter, where they can be fully satisfied and fully benefited. So, I'm directing you towards Srila Prabhupada. Of course, I think most of you have heard me say this many times. It may be asked, that, well, why do I stress this again and again? But Srila Prabhupada himself, he didn't very much speak about his guru. Then why do I? Well, there is, obviously, should be obvious, maybe not obvious enough in the eyes of some, that Srila Prabhupada was very clearly a Nitya Siddha Mahabhagavat empowered devotee of Krishna, come from the spiritual world. Of course, you may say, what's the proof? Do you have any film of him? Is there any film of him coming from the spiritual world? What's the proof? The proof is his activity. What he did, it's not possible for others to do. Although he always said, do more than me. But practically we can see that Srila Prabhupada was a very special, empowered representative of Krishna and the whole parampara. The whole parampara of acharyas up to this point, their mission was fulfilled to a large extent by Srila Prabhupada, who did what was considered impossible, namely bring Krishna consciousness to the world. He did it. It's not an ordinary man's job. Others were not even thinking of it because to them it seemed unthinkable. They found it difficult enough to do anything in India, just even to maintain a few temples. What to speak of preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world? And Srila Prabhupada did that. Now obviously he's not an ordinary devotee. So there is a very great difference, as I say, obviously, between Srila Prabhupada and myself. In another sense, not so. If I simply, I can, here, get this one. Here, you can record this statement. It'll be published in the Back to Prabhupada magazine. I can guarantee that I can be as good as Srila Prabhupada. There you go. There you go, print it. Put it on the front page. So, I can be as good as Srila Prabhupada. As Srila Prabhupada always said, if I convey the same message that he conveyed, if I simply repeat what he says, then the message that he brought, if I give that intact, then you get the same message. Why is Srila Prabhupada so great? What is it? Is it was the date of his birth, or the place of his birth, or his family background, or his singing ability, or his cooking ability? What was it? What is it that makes Srila Prabhupada great? He's great because he carried the message of the parampara. He presented it. He was extraordinarily empowered to impart that into the hearts of others. But intrinsically, yeah, that's what makes him great, that he carried the message of Krishna. So anyone who does that, they become as good as all the acharyas in parampara because they do that. That's why Srila Prabhupada, in his definitive essay on the role of guru, said that guru is one but appears in a variety of forms. Guru is one, why? Because the message is one. Some years ago, some photos were being distributed of one of our god brothers who was initiating disciples in ISKCON at the time. There was a photo of him as a baby at the age of one, and there was the underneath it was written Guru is one. That is not the meaning of Guru is one. It means that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The facts about him are unchanged, unchangeable. At the same time, on the platform of Rasa, it's always changing. That's what makes it fun. But in terms of understanding who Krishna is, as he presents himself in Bhagavad Gita, which Srila Prabhupada based his teachings on Bhagavad Gita, that is unchanging. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Vivasva. It may not have been exactly the same words. He didn't say, presumably he didn't say to Vivasvan exactly that, for instance, Mataparataramna Yanyat Kinchidasti Dhananjaya. He didn't say Dhananjaya because when he said Dhananjaya, he was addressing Arjuna. And what he said to Vivasvan obviously wasn't exactly the same words, nor was he inciting Vivasvan to fight. So he may have been in a different context, but it was the same teachings. So what Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita, that is unchanging, although the format may change somewhat, but Krishna is the same and knowledge of him remains the same. And anyone who speaks that, they are a guru because they do that. And in this world, the knowledge of Krishna is received in guru parampara. So one who presents that knowledge is known as a bona fide guru. One who presents that and lives according to it and teaches others to do that. So in parampara there will be some very great acharyas. There may be others who do not seem to be so great. In a village in Bangladesh, a remote village, that means now there's a road going close to the village. But in those days, it would go by from Narayan Ganj to take us a launch boat along the river for a few hours, then you get a rowing boat along a smaller river, then you walk for some time and you reach the village. And in that village was a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. He had passed away, but he was living, he'd been in Calcutta, and then he came back, and in his all day, he was sitting at home chanting, and some local people, not local people, just two young boys and their sister, I mean three, they used to come, and they were fascinated by him, and he taught them about Krishna Bhakti, and eventually they took initiation from him. They were his three disciples. But as far as they're concerned, they got everything from him. They got Krishna, the whole spiritual world, everything they need to go to Krishna, they got from him. So as far as they're concerned, as in the history of Vaishnavism, we won't find his name. We won't find his name written in any book. It's in my book, in the list of disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. I hope. Remember to put it in there. But to his disciples, he's the representative of Sarasvati Thakur, Gorky Shodas, Babaji Maharaj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Jagannath Das, Babaji Maharaj, Baladev Vidyabhushan, and all the acharyas. He is as good as them because he gave them the gift that they came to give. So, Guru is one. In actual, because all actual gurus give the same message, the message of Bhagavad Gita, how to attain Krishna. Nevertheless, we, especially worship Srila Prabhupada, knowing him to be the very empowered representative of Krishna. We see that Srila Prabhupada was self-evidently an authority. Self-evidently means he said that his authority came from his guru, but we didn't see his guru. We never saw his guru. But we saw in his own behavior his full absorption in Krishna consciousness. We saw that in Srila Prabhupada there is nothing in his activities other than the desire to please Krishna. He never thought that anything but pure devotion to Krishna is of benefit to the conditioned souls. And therefore, he was able to find the defect in everything. You may think, well, that's a strange quality for a sadhu. But he found the defect in everything that was not fully Krishna conscious, because he could see this is not Krishna conscious. It may appear to be very good. Something might appear to be very good. And which sadhu in the modern age, except Srila Prabhupada, would say that opening schools and hospitals is not actually beneficial? Opening hospitals is simply a diversion from the real purpose of life. Mostly the sadhus, they're building schools and hospitals. And Prabhupada said, Srila Prabhupada said that this is all simply for the sake of the body. He gave the example of rescuing the shirt of a drowning man. So only Srila Prabhupada did this, and we don't find anyone else who came into human society and said that everything you are doing is parabhavastava gabhoda jata, speaking according to Shastra. Yavanna jignyasata atmatapa. Everything you are doing is simply self-defeating because you have not inquired into the actual purpose of life. You do not know what the actual purpose of life is. So Srila Prabhupada, he could see the reality, see the truth. At that time, no one would speak out against the United Nations. Everyone thought, the United Nations, very good. Everyone's coming together to make peace in the world. And Srila Prabhupada said, talking about all the eminent world leaders, they're like a pack of barking dogs. He said, there's no question of peace. If you bring dogs together, they'll simply snarl at each other and bark. So these big leaders, they're just like a pack of dogs. They have no self-control. They're only interested in sense gratification. They have no idea of the purpose of life. They're just like animals. Ahara nidra bhaya maitunancha. They eat, sleep, mate and defend. But Srila Prabhupada was the only one who could point this out, and those who were fortunate enough to hear him could understand, yes, he's speaking the truth. He can see things which no one else in the world saw. Now it's become obvious. But at that time, people, they even believed that their leaders cared for them. Most people in the world were very upset when John F. Kennedy was shot dead, which was shortly the President of America, shortly before, 2 years before Srila Prabhupada came to America, the President of America had been shot dead. And people thought, oh, this is horrible. He was such a nice man. He was a good man. He cared about others. He wanted to do good in the world, and so on. And maybe he did have some traces of that, but because he was also in the wrong parampara, not in the Vaishnava parampara. He was in the andha parampara, the parampara of blind people. One blind person is leading another. So, though he may have had good intentions, but just like one blind man may propose to lead other blind men, and he has very good intentions, but he's not intelligent enough to understand that he's not capable of leading them. He has the major disqualification of being blind. And therefore, everyone trustingly holds on to him in a chain, and they all fall down into the ditch. But Srila Prabhupada, he pointed this out. He was self-evidently an authority, self-evidently a saintly person. So his authority, although he claimed authority from the Shastra and from the Acharyas, he himself, by his every act, being free from the desire, from sense gratification, his every act being directed toward the service of Krishna, toward helping others in Krishna consciousness, he was self-evidently an authority. And that became more apparent as the Krishna consciousness movement blossomed all over the world and so many people came to him. When he was wandering the streets of New York alone, of course, Srila Prabhupada said that, I was never alone. I always felt the presence of my Guru Maharaj with me. But to worldly vision, of course, if his Guru Maharaj is with him, then all the parampara is with him, Krishna is with him, the whole spiritual world is with him. But to external vision, he was a lonely old man, out of place, in a lonely, unkind city. But later, when Srila Prabhupada would fly in at the various airports, big kirtan parties were there, in the newspaper, reporters, TV journalists would come, and they recognized that Srila Prabhupada is an important person because he's got all these people to follow him, which In a remarkable way, Srila Prabhupada didn't have a political agenda. He convinced people to live what to Americans at that time especially appeared to be an extremely self-abnegating lifestyle, in which there's no meat eating, which in America in those days was unusual. In fact, it was, well, I wasn't in America, I was raised in England, but at that time, to be vegetarian was still considered by most people to be crazy. And to most people had never even heard of reincarnation. But to think that that could be true, that was also considered crazy. But Srila Prabhupada, he radically changed the lives of so many people, and in a manner that no one in America could possibly have imagined before. That changing the, well, revolution was a common word at that time. Among the hippies, and beatniks, and all these various unusual kinds of people in America at that time. They're talking about revolution and guns and changing the political system, all this kind of thing. But Srila Prabhupada changed the lives of people and made them so obviously happy that it was surprising, amazing. And people would ask. Srila Prabhupada often said that a priest in America was somewhere, he met Srila Prabhupada on a plane and asked, how is it that you have brought so many young people to God when we in the churches, we can't keep them at all? They're running away from us and they're running to you. How could you do that? We're talking to them about God, they're not interested. And you're talking about God, you're not just talking about God, but you're telling them no meat, no fish, no eggs, no illicit sex. That was a big thing for the hippies to get. No intoxication. Hippie life. Most of Srila Prabhupada's followers came from the hippie background. Hippie life turned on illicit sex, intoxication, and pseudo-spiritualism, and music. I suppose these are the four pillars of hippie life. And unusual dress style, long hair for men, these are the upalakshanas. But the main characteristics are this. Srila Prabhupada, he radically changed people's lives. So it became seen that he was an authority. He was an important person. But he always was an important person, even when he was wandering the streets of New York alone. Even at that time, he was the most important person in the universe. Krishna could recognize that. He knew, even Prabhupada himself knew that that was going to happen. But people didn't recognize until so many followers came. Now, there were other supposed gurus in America at that time who had more followers. But they never changed the lives of their followers in the way that Srila Prabhupada did. There was the transcendental meditation and many followers, so-called transcendental meditation. And there was the Bal Yogeshwar, Guru Maharaji, who was a young boy from Dehradun or somewhere in Himachal, who claimed himself to be Krishna. And then he claimed his mother to be Durga. He hadn't read the Srimad Bhagavatam. Durga is the sister of Krishna, not the mother. Then he married his attractive American wife, and his mother disowned him because she thought he's from a Brahmin family. He should marry a Brahmin girl. And then this so-called incarnation of Krishna declared to his followers that his mother is no longer an incarnation of Durga. She got demoted. So the others had more followers. But Srila Prabhupada, he changed the lives of his followers. He wasn't just attracting people to follow him, but he changed the lives by directing them toward Krishna. In this way he was an actual guru, and a very powerful guru, inasmuch as he was able to radically change the lives, or improve the lives, of persons who had no idea of anything about this. I often like to tell the story, or the anecdote, of how in Srila Prabhupada's first temple, which was a rented storefront, some of his followers one day, without telling Srila Prabhupada, to surprise him, to, as a gift, something they wanted to do to please him, they went to an Indian store, which were very few in those days, and they bought some posters. Indian prints, Brijbasi prints in Mathura. I don't know if that company is still going on. They used to make beautiful prints which would, of Krishna. There's that famous picture of Krishna sitting with a deer next to him. That's a Brijbasi print. So they brought various pictures back, but they weren't sure which. They had some idea that some would be proper and some would not be proper. So they decorated the storefront with these various pictures, and one of them was a picture of Hanuman. So they bought Srila Prabhupada, and they asked Prabhupada, "Is this all right?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes, yes, it's very nice." And they went one by one to see the pictures, and Srila Prabhupada would say, "This is all right, and this isn't." Maybe if there was a picture of, I don't know, it's not described exactly, but for instance, if there was a picture of Ramakrishna, then this so-called Ramakrishna of Calcutta, that would not have been all right. So then they came to the picture of Hanuman, and they asked Prabhupada, "Is this all right?" Prabhupada said, "Yes, yes, this is very good." And one of the devotees, who was later to be initiated as Hayagriva, asked, "Well, what is it? Is it a cat?" Everyone in India, including the Muslims and the Christians, they all know that Hanuman is a monkey. But these fledgling devotees who Srila Prabhupada was bringing to Krishna consciousness, you can just understand from this, they were so ignorant of Indian culture that they didn't know who was Hanuman, and that Hanuman was a monkey, and they thought maybe it was a cat. So, definitely Srila Prabhupada was special among the special. Every devotee of Krishna is special. Every creature of Krishna consciousness is special. Although Srila Prabhupada was clearly specially empowered, clearly means everyone should be able to see that, except the owls who keep their eyes closed. The owl cannot see the sun. And they just tell them, "Well, open your eyes," and they won't open it. If you ask, "Show me the sun," but I'm keeping my eyes closed, then how will you see? So clearly Srila Prabhupada is an empowered representative of Krishna. But if we refuse to recognize that, then it's very difficult to convince those who don't want to be confused. But even though Srila Prabhupada was clearly special among the special, nevertheless, he claimed his authority not specifically on the basis of his achievements, but on the same basis that every guru does and must do, and that is on the basis of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. He would say that I am telling you this because Krishna says. This is in Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna says, and Srila Prabhupada would speak. On this basis, Srila Prabhupada would always quote Shastra, or he would quote the Acharya. This is the authority. So this, on this authority he taught, one is a guru and others should go on in future speaking the message of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And some people doubt. They say, well, how? No one can be a guru after Prabhupada, because they're not on the same level. But one who speaks the message of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, they are a guru. By that very fact. You can say they're not on the same level as Prabhupada, but in that sense, they are on the same level, although they are of the same category, because what Srila Prabhupada established as his credentials for being a guru, that's the same for every guru. He established means he took that from the previous acharyas. As Srila Prabhupada often said, I have nothing new to say. I'm simply speaking the same message that is given, and that is the qualification. If one makes up something new, then that is a disqualification. In art, in modern art, whether it's painting or sculpture or music, the whole idea is that you should be original, do something new, creative. But because the truth is one, because the truth is unchanging, in another sense changing, but in tattva, who is Krishna? He is, that remains the same always. So to speak the knowledge of Krishna as given in Bhagavad Gita, that is the qualification of a guru, and one who does so, teaches others that, and teaches others to follow that, is a guru. So, I'm directing you towards Srila Prabhupada, because I have full faith, and it's very easy for you to have full faith in Srila Prabhupada as a perfect devotee of Krishna, who spoke the truth as received in parampara, and was a perfect representative of it. And it's appropriate for myself to direct you toward Srila Prabhupada, because your faith in Krishna will be fully, you can fully put your faith in Srila Prabhupada. And you can fully put your faith in me in as much as I represent Srila Prabhupada to you. So it's a very simple principle. I don't say follow me. I say follow Srila Prabhupada. And I can show you how to follow Srila Prabhupada. I will speak according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And this is the training that I have to impart to you. How to see everything through the eyes of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. To stop seeing the world as a place for my own enjoyment and see everything in the world as paraphernalia for serving Krishna. That's the whole trick. Just to see, just to change our vision from how I can enjoy the world to how I can live in this world to serve Krishna. That's it. That's all I have to learn. That's all I have to teach you. There are many details, but that's it, basically. So, that's what I'm doing here. And that's why you're coming here. And praising me, my job is done. If I simply repeat what has been given by previous acharyas, and I have to train you to follow that, and my job will be perfect if you do that. I hope that at least some of you who have, those of you who are listening to what I said and who are reading Srila Prabhupada's books, of course one of the main things that I always tell you is to read Srila Prabhupada's books, that by doing so, if I were to start preaching some nonsense, that you would recognize. If, for instance, I were to start propagating that Mother Teresa was the latest manifestation of Mohini Murti, she is Vishnu avatar in a female form. If I seriously started to propagate this, some of you might be foolish enough to follow me, because especially in Kali Yuga, whatever nonsense anyone says, someone will follow it. And generally the more nonsensical it is, the more people believe it. But I'm confident that most of you, or at least those who have heard me up to now, would realize that I'm talking nonsense and it shouldn't be accepted. We follow the Guru because he follows the previous Gurus and Sadhu and Shastra. And therefore, we accept as a Guru one who does that. And we cannot accept one who is a self-made avatar. We cannot, there are so many Gurus in India. But they are either self-made avatars, or they take a few things from Shastra and just twist it upside down, inside out. They don't present the actual message. So you should you please try to understand what are the actual teachings of Shastra and follow that. And that's what I'm trying to do in relationship to you. My aim and object of is not to sit up on a big seat and tell you what to do. That is not in and of itself my aim and object. Generally the demons, or general materialistic people, they like to be the center of attention, to sit on a big seat. People dream of being film stars or TV stars or they like to daydream how I've become such a big person. George Harrison, a well-known name in the Western world, at one time he was so famous and popular. I think the young people now, they may, in the Western world, they may not even know his name. He was so famous. There was one film star in the 1930s or something in America. About the age of 30, he was so popular. The women all loved him. He was so popular. About the age of 30, he got some internal swelling suddenly and died. And like dozens of women all over America, they committed suicide because they loved him so much. I saw him in some encyclopedia. I couldn't remember the name. And it's only some historians of cinema or whatever, they even know his name. He was such a big man that, like the Amitabh Bachchan of America, but now no one knows his name. And guess what? In 80 years from now, in India also, no one will know the name of Amitabh Bachchan. He won't remain. Even in Tamil Nadu, no one cares for him. So, this idea, I'll become a very big man. It's a foolish idea. Who's the biggest person materially in the universe? Lord Brahma. Of whom Vidyapati, the Vaishnava poet, says, Kota Chaturanana Mari Mari Jauta. How many Brahmas are coming and going? Coming and going. So many Brahma. Brahma came to Krishna in Dwaraka. Just wait a minute there, sir. The doorman said, just wait. No one says just wait to Brahma. So eventually he was allowed in. The doorman said, no one's allowed in. Well, they went back to Krishna. So, Brahma has come. Krishna asked, which Brahma? So the doorman asked, who are you? You want to see Krishna? Who are you? I'm Brahma. And when came back again, which Brahma? Which Brahma? I'm Brahma. You know, I was born out of your navel, you remember? I'm your son. You don't remember? I have four heads. Oh, okay, four-headed brother. Okay, all right, let him in. And then, before Brahma, Krishna asked him, how are you? Everything all right? He said, yeah, but the reason I came before I say that, could you just, I can't understand, you asked which Brahma? Is there any other Brahma? I mean, I've been sitting at the top of this universe since it began, even before it began. And I see everything that's going on, and I never saw any other Brahma. What other Brahma? So Krishna, he laughed a little bit. And then he gave Brahma a vision of all the other Brahmas. And Brahma only had four heads. And every one of them had more heads. Some of them had millions of heads. Then Brahma thought, oh, I'm only one Brahma among millions of Brahmas, and I'm the smallest Brahma. So, Amitabh Bachchan, we have nothing against him. Might be dangerous to say anything against him. We have nothing against him. But he's very insignificant in comparison to Brahma, who's very insignificant in comparison to other Brahmas, and all of them are very insignificant in relationship to Krishna. So the idea to be a big man is extremely foolish. So, it might seem that I made it. I'm a success. I'm sitting on a big seat. People are saying, Jai. Made it to the top of the ISKCON ladder. Now we have to see the guru ratings. Gurus are at the top. Who's the top guru these days? This year, have I gone up or down the table? How many disciples did I make? How many times did I appear on TV? Who's most featured on the Dandavat conference? So in this way we can find out who's the biggest guru? But, well, I'm not here in competition with other gurus. It's not a guru competition. But, maybe some disciples feel like that. They've got to promote our guru and show who's the best of all. Our guru must be the best. Just like people feel, my country is the best. People who live in Iceland, a population of about 200,000 people, they think Iceland is the best country in the world. What is the proof of that? I was born here. So people think, my guru must be the best. What's the proof? Because I'm his disciple. So people don't realize that. See, all these people are in Maya. They don't understand that our guru is the best. So we have to promote. Then everyone will understand our guru is the best. And I'm the most senior disciple. I'm the most intimate disciple. You see, I have my photo taken with him. It's hanging on the wall. And I did the best. I brought so many new disciples. So I'm obviously the dearest disciple of the best guru. You see, I'm so important. So I'm not in this guru race. It's not a horse race. If I feel, I'm doing good. Doing pretty good. Now I've got so many disciples. Next year I'll have more. After that I'll have more. It's just like in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, the demons, they think, so much wealth I have, tomorrow I'll get more, I'll kill my enemy, I'll take over. So materialistic people, they might think that sitting on a big seat like this and speaking to others, it's pretty good, it's doing pretty good. Or they might become envious of it. But if I am to think that this is all meant for me, then I'll be finished. Punar Mushiko Bhava. The Rishi, the mouse came to the Rishi and said, the cat is harassing me. So the Rishi said, what do you want, dear mouse? I want to become a cat. Okay, he made him a cat. Then the cat came back after some time and said, now I'm being harassed by the dog. So what do you want? Make me into a dog. Okay, become a dog. Sharameya Baba, become a dog. Then after some time, the dog came back and said, now the tiger is harassing me. So what do you want? I want to become a tiger. Okay, become a tiger. Then the tiger thought, well, that Rishi's not very fatty, but is edible. And the Rishi saw this, and he again converted him into a man. Punar Mushiko Bhava. So in the same way, if I think that by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, I've been converted into a big person, and now I can take precedence over him, now I'm qualified to accept all this praise and honor, then I again become eligible for being converted into a mouse. So it's a very dangerous position to sit up here. But those who are preaching, they should accept some danger. It's dangerous to be a preacher, because if one is actually preaching, then people will become grateful and respectful. And then, but if one becomes enamored by that respect, then it's dangerous. But in his commentary on the verses, Jari Deko Tare Koha, Krishna Upadesh, Amaragyai Guru Hoya Taro Edesh, Wherever you go, whoever you meet, instruct them in the science of Krishna. By my order, be a guru and deliver this land. In his commentary on these verses, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote that I am a great devotee. I'm above that level of accepting disciples. One should not think like that. One should take the responsibility of preaching to others and trying to help them come up as our guru has helped us come up. It's a dangerous position, because if one starts to accept for his own sense gratification any honor, then that destroys it. Following our acharyas have not put us into such a dangerous position without instructing us of the perils of doing so, and without giving us direction on how we can go up in Krishna consciousness and help others to go up and not be pulled down by the petty desire for name, fame and glory. And money. Lava puja pratishtha jato upashakagam. We find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he is quite aware of the importance of the task that he undertook in describing the later pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in describing his intimate, esoteric ecstasies of Krishna in the mood of Radha, and of describing, Krishna's Kaviraj is well aware of the import of his describing the ontology of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can just say tattva for ontology. Simple translation. He was well aware of that. That it was a momentous task. But he reminded himself within the text and of how he considered himself and how he wanted others to perceive him. He wrote, Jagai madhai hoite muishe papishta purishe kit hoite muishe logishta jemora nam shunai tara punna khoi. He said that I am more sinful than Jagai and Madhai, and I am lower than a worm in stool. Anyone who hears my name, by doing so, his pious activities are spoiled, they are destroyed, and one who says my name by doing so becomes sinful. So, actually, that is his qualification for being able to compose Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was able to act as a transparent medium, giving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the world, because he didn't want to take anything from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He didn't want to the name and fame and that is due to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He did not want to take any of it. He wanted to give the whole Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He didn't want to plunder anything from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and claim it as his own. And because of that, he was able to give Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to others. Because of his mood of considering himself most fallen and not worthy of any respect whatsoever. For that reason, he was able to fully give Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And naturally, because he did give Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to others, then we worship the name of Krishnadas Kaviraj even to this present day. But he didn't want that. He wasn't writing for that purpose, but only because of the order of the Vaishnavas. He further said, Murka Nicha Kudramui Bishai Lalosh Vaishnav Agya Bale Kari Eto Hekshahosh. He said, how is it that I have the audacity to write on the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when I am, he declared himself as murka, foolish, nicha, low, kudra, insignificant, and always desiring material enjoyment, but on the order of the Vaishnavas, on that strength, I have the audacity to compose this Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, one of the, there, as we say, guru is one, but some, their contribution to the world is exceptional. The Gauriya Sampradaya could not be the Gauriya Sampradaya without the contribution of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. His role is essential. Others, they are conveying the message to their disciples. To their disciples, they are essential, but not to the Sampradaya as a whole. So Krishnadas Kaviraj, his contribution is essential to the Sampradaya. But to all others who must carry the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's given us Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message. Jare dekho tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Amar agyai guru hoya tare edesh. Be a guru. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order is that is being passed in parampara. How can one do so without becoming a monster? Guru, his role is to take the life of the disciple. He canvasses, you surrender. Of course, Srila Prabhupada would always say, you don't surrender to me, you surrender to Krishna. But then he would also, intrinsically, we're not to surrender to Guru, who is a jiva, but to Krishna. But the method to surrender to Krishna is through the Guru. We don't surrender to, that's the mistake of all these Mayavadis and demons who take the role of Guru. They take the Guru, the disciples, they offer themselves to the Guru, or they're supposed to, and it stops there. The Guru gobbles it all up. He's a Rakshasa, he's eating people. Whereas a Vaishnava guru takes everything and offers it to Krishna. So if one has the Rakshasa mentality, then he will gobble up the people. He will attempt to consume them. He becomes the bhogi, or he attempts to become the enjoyer of his disciples. So if one has that mentality, then he becomes finished. But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has taught us, and all generations of acharyas have by their practical behavior taught us, to, while considering oneself lower than a straw in the street, one should, considering oneself wholly unqualified on the order of the Vaishnavas, on the orders of the Guru, one should position oneself to accept everything that is offered, become the tax collector, and offer that in parampara to Krishna. Amito Vaishnav e buddhi hoilo amani na hobo ami. Bhaktivinoda Thakur Samyak. But if I think that I'm a Vaishnava, then I'll become, I will lose the quality of not desiring honor. Therefore, he says that I won't accept desire. Taishishatava takya sarvada naloibo pujaka. He says that then I'll just remain the disciple of my guru and I won't accept the puja, the worship of anyone. He also accepted disciples. Is this not contradictory or hypocritical? But we can understand that he accepted disciples, thinking them as his masters. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has elaborated on this. You can read about that in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. So, in this consciousness of thinking that I am fit to, or I'm not fit for anything, I should serve all others, but my guru has ordered me to serve in this way, to guide others in service to Krishna. One can accept this otherwise very dangerous way. Otherwise we go insane. The insanity of thinking that I should be worshipped and Krishna should be worshipped. Practically, literally, Srila Prabhupada saved me from going insane. And everyone in this world is insane. I mean, we shouldn't speak about our former life. But we can do. To this extent, as Krishnadas Kaviraj himself does in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he writes that, well, I shouldn't write about myself, but to demonstrate the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, he does so. That how Nityananda Prabhu appreciated Krishnadas Kaviraj's chastising his own brother. Krishnadas Kaviraj was, he didn't like his brother. Because his brother was not a proper devotee of Krishna. So, Nityananda Prabhu appreciated that and sent Krishnas Kaviraj to Vrindavan. So, I can say about my previous life that probably, literally, I would have gone insane. If it wasn't for the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, as many of my god siblings it was actually considered prestigious among hippies to be crazy. And some actually did become literally crazy. So, having been saved by Srila Prabhupada from becoming literally, even in the sense that the insane people of the world consider insane, having been saved from that insanity, then it's a great challenge to be saved from. Well, this may appear to be insanity itself. What is this, sitting above, so high above others? It doesn't seem to be the proper position for a Vaishnava. And we've seen, even within the short history of our ISKCON, that power, prestige, and money have caused the fall down of much greater followers of Srila Prabhupada than myself. So it might seem to be madness to keep on doing the same thing, see so many fell away. Then some will put the theory, well, you see, some became gurus and then they became intoxicated by money, power, prestige, position. So the best thing to do is to stop having gurus altogether and just have Prabhupada as the guru. That is not the solution. mean, even they call this Ridvik Vad. But even if then someone has to be the Ridvik, and people will look up to him as a guru anyway. It's semantical, actually. They say that no one should call himself a guru, and we just accept Prabhupada as the guru. But no guru calls himself a guru anyway. No one will say that, yes, I am the guru, I've come to save you all. Anyone who's actually a guru will say that I have no personal qualification, as Prabhupada himself said, but I am simply acting as a representative of my guru. So if anyone says that, that is the qualification to be a guru. And people need to be guided on how to follow. So Srila Prabhupada wanted all his disciples to be gurus. Therefore I'm taking this role, and I can discharge that properly if I simply always remember that I am doing so on the order of Srila Prabhupada, and my duty is to convey his teachings to you. Srila Prabhupada took me from Maya and trained me how to act in a manner that is pleasing to Krishna. He told me you should do this, you should not do that. So I should do the same thing with you. I shall tell you, do this, don't do that. If you do this, you will make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Do these things. The same path given by Rupa Goswami. Don't do these other things. So in this way, if we teach, at the same time, being afraid of Maya, not thinking, I have conquered Maya. Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, Abhay Chara Aravinda. We are fearless at his lotus feet, because we know that if we remain in contact with his instructions by regularly hearing them, contemplating them, and following them, then we shall remain safe. But we should fear Maya.